A rich tradition. College Football Podcast is now live.
Hello and welcome to A Rich Tradition College Football Podcast. I'm Spencer Van Horn. He's Robbie Steltenpole. Two friends, one love, and that is college football. Roberto, how are you, my friend?
Doing good, man. Just got home from a very long day. Our girls soccer team won 10-0.
Say you have sons.
I do. But we won 10-0 in our game tonight.
Your girls soccer team.
Yep. Girls soccer team won 10-0. We are the number 3 ranked team in the state. So nice. Yeah, man. It's going good. It's going good. Just
so are
tired.
We in the playoffs?
Oh yeah, yeah. We are. Yes, we are definitely going to be in the playoffs.
And okay, so we're not currently in the playoffs, but we are headed. We're still in the regular season.
Yes, we're about halfway through the season right now.
Sure. Very good. All right. Well, that's exciting.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Yeah, man. It's the one thing I can lean on is that I know that my soccer team that I coach is good, and I don't have to be disappointed yet again with the fact that my Syracuse team wins 20 games for the first time since 2018 and in the ACC and is unable to make the tournament because for some reason college basketball's metrics are absolutely bogus now.
I'm very sorry for that.
No, that's all
right. Did Syracuse not make it into the ACC tournament?
They did, but they're not going to make it. They're not going to make the national tourney this year after winning 20 games in the ACC.
well, did they do in the conference tournament?
Not good. A team that they had beaten twice already this year, they lost to last night, and that same team is about to beat a top 7 ranked Duke team, or at least they're up. They're up by 5 with 4 minutes to go. So.
Very nice. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, we only had one thing planned for tonight. There's been lots of news for college football, but we'll get to that at some point, kind of let things play out. And but we wanted to take a look around the country at some of the top 10 jobs.
Yes. So when doing this, Spencer, like what was some of like basically, what was some of the criteria that you had when thinking of this, coming up with this list?
Yeah, so resources. I didn't really try to lean too much into the specifics for name, image, and likeness and all those things. I kind of went from a, you know, where are the places that have the traditional things that you want in terms of being able to go after recruits and the backing from the boosters and not just them, but the front office and, you know, good resources for recruiting, not just going to the recruits, but, you know, where are they in your vicinity? So I kind of went from a traditional standpoint, knowing that the name, image, and likeness part of this has got to factor in somewhere. I did have that a part of my equation, but not to the extent that maybe it should be, or that maybe to the extent of which it will be factored in going forward, because obviously it's playing a bigger and bigger role almost daily now.
Okay. Anything else?
No, but with that in mind, do you think? I mean, traditionally, the top 10 teams are probably going to be pretty similar all across the board. Me, you, and anybody else who would put together a list would probably be pretty similar across the board. Is there, and I want to say I've heard this conversation, is there a school that their name, image, and likeness success or their what they're able to do from a name, image, and likeness standpoint, their collective, is there a school that would have a big enough boost to get them into the top 10 who wouldn't already be in the top 10? Does that question make sense?
Yeah, yes, it does. I would probably say A&M.
So you don't have them in your top 10 already?
I do, but I do know for a fact that there are people within the industry who have had this conversation, have ranked these games, this stuff, who would not put them in that because of the other things, like the culture issues, the booster problems, things like that. Like, if you're just talking about NIL,
they almost want it too bad.
Say again?
They almost want it too bad in College Station.
Absolutely. And it's almost like it's... Yeah, they've got more money than Scrooge McDuck, but they've also got nut jobs who are overseeing this, and their fans are nuts, and they don't have realistic expectations. So like we're not gonna talk about the ranks, but like A&M did make my ranking, but it's really just out of possibility, you know. Yep. another team, I really like this question. Excuse me. Another team that could be in the top 10 that would only be there probably not solely, but because of their NIL is Auburn. And also just because it's still in the SEC, I would say Tennessee. Those two schools, those two programs could easily be in the top 10 just on sheer NIL alone.
Tennessee's an interesting suggestion because I think if you were to have, and I know that I do have Florida State in my top 10, and I think I saw something that had Florida State outside the top 10 a ranking when I was just sort of gauging what everybody else thought about this. I have Florida State inside my top 10. Why is it? Part of me feels like if this was 1998, Tennessee would 100% be in our top 10. And I think sometimes it's funny that you could have a list like this, and most of the time my thinking says these programs and the quality of the job is one thing, and then the coach who is being successful at that program is a separate thing. Like, you need the right coach. Michigan's been dormant for a long time. Texas has been dormant for a long time. Tennessee, another example of a program that's been dormant for a long time. We're kind of watching Texas come out of being dormant, and Michigan just won the national championship, so we've seen them come out of that, and obviously their playoff runs as well is a part of that. But I think it's interesting that Tennessee falls out of the top 10 job because they've been dormant for so long. But it's, if Nick Saban walked into Tennessee, it probably wouldn't take him very long to get that turned around and make that a relevant school again. And Josh Heupel's doing a good job, I think. But if the right guy got in there, and Heupel might be that, but if the right guy got in there, there's no question Tennessee could be a national champion contender in the next couple of years. You know, do you know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I think it makes sense. Here's the thing about FSU. Because FSU did not make my top 10. They would be just outside the top 10, but they are not in my top 10. And one of the biggest reasons, like, okay, so I asked you about criteria, like you talked about NIL. One of the biggest things for me was recruiting pipeline, like access to talent just within your own state. That was important to me. Yes, I know NIL can balance that out, but at the same time, like there's still a ton of kids in Wisconsin who are going to go to Wisconsin. There are a ton of kids in Georgia who will go to Georgia. You know, you see what I'm saying? Like, and there's just always talent in Florida, but Florida State is no longer the only team going after them. And now that UCF has joined the Big 12, I actually kind of think this is going to hinder FSU even more when it comes to in-state talent. And so that's just the things that I like. That's just one of the things, one of the reasons why I've kept FSU out. Also because FSU, like the same reason why Miami didn't make my top 10. FSU, yes, has a history of being a top tier job, but they've only been there recently in the last 10 years since the 2014 run. Like, this past year was the first time they've really been there again. And so that shows me that there are things that hold them back at times, especially.
Okay, so this is funny because now. I think that has to do more with the coach. My idea of a top 10 job is if the right guy gets in there, how quickly is the potential for it to get turned around? If Jim Harbaugh, Ryan Day, Kirby Smart, Brian Kelly, you know, Nick Saban, if they jump into that job at Florida State or at Tennessee, how quickly could they turn that thing around? And of course, you'd have to have some breaks go your way. There's always a little bit of luck involved, but how quickly could they get that thing turned around? And in my opinion, Florida State's a place, Florida's a place, Miami maybe not so much. I don't disagree with Miami being outside the top 10 for other reasons, but I think Tennessee's involved in this as well, that those programs could get turned around lickety split if the right guy is in the driver's seat for those places. So I think maybe I've got kind of a different idea, it sounds like, than maybe you do. I think Florida State's being...
And that's okay. I want to be clear. Right, that's of course. Perfectly fine.
Right. So I think Florida State, since 2014, some of that's the coach's fault that they're not where they want to be. That the Florida State administration didn't necessarily hire the right guy, similar to where Florida's at right now. They just didn't hire the right guy after Urban Meyer left.
Don't respond to this, like, as far as telling me the answer, but I'm caught off guard if you have Florida in your top 10. Because also here's the thing about,
you don't want the answer to that.
Not right now. Because we're going to share them in a minute, but also about Florida State, man, they're about to leave their conference. They are in limbo with what is going on with their conference and where they're going to be in 3 years. And depending on where they are, depending on whether they're in the SEC or Big Ten, makes that job appealing, more or less appealing. Not because of not because of, oh, you're in a worse conference, but because you're in a harder conference. So there are things that I think that are going on outside of Florida State right now that has nothing to do with weight room, really NIL, or on the field. I think does that make sense too?
Yes, it does.
Okay.
Because Miami's not in my top 10 because of where their stadium is and the lack of buy-in that they've had over the last few years. I know that that's supposed to be changing with the money that they're putting in there. I think Miami has top 10 potential. I think it's a top 20 job. And it's another weird one again, because if the right guy gets in there and they switch things around and they become a winning program again, maybe they skyrocket up the board. But ultimately, there's some things outside of Miami that make you think, if you're a coach, do you really want to try to get, you know, what's that battle like with commuting your fans to a campus or to a stadium that's an hour and a half or 45 minutes, whatever it is, away from your campus?
Yeah, no, I agree with you completely. All right, Spencer. So let's, I guess the same, well, no, we already asked that question. So let's go through this. Let's go from 10 to 1, because there's part of me that thinks we are definitely going to be deadlocked on number 1, and it's not going to be the assumed number 1 that everyone else would have. So let's start with 10, and let me hear who you have at 10.
So I do have FSU at 10.
Okay.
I think that place is right next to, I mean, that's the golden sweet spot for talent. And Florida State, for a long time, I know things have changed with the way Bama and even Ohio State now and Georgia and Tennessee and LSU all come into the state. I know that that has switched some things around. But again, it goes back to me thinking, if the right guy is at that place, everybody's dipping into, like, Kirby's at Georgia and he's having to compete with everybody who goes into Florida also. So if you just switched Kirby from Georgia to FSU, Kirby would still have to fight the same people for those same recruits. So I don't really look at it that being such an issue, because it's either you're doing it at Georgia, you're doing it at Bama, you're doing it at LSU. And I'm sure we've got all three of those programs inside of our top 10. Those programs are fighting for the same recruits in the state of Florida and even their own states as well. So I like FSU as a top 10 job, and I totally get where you're coming from on the, where are you going to be in the next few years? What sort of situation does that create? You're obviously behind the eight ball because the ACC already doesn't have the kind of money that Florida State, I'm sorry, that that the SEC and Big Ten have. But I almost don't want to make that Florida State's fault. They didn't necessarily control all of the things that, you know, got made, decisions that got made for them, I guess. Mm-hmm. They didn't have complete control over all of that, at least in my mind. So I don't want to punish them for something they can't control.
Okay. We talked about FSU pretty much, like I already gave my take, and you responded to that. My number 10 is already a team that we kind of mentioned already, too, and it's A&M. I'm not even going to lie. I surely have A&M in the top 10 for two reasons: the Scrooge McDuck money and the pipeline of talent that's in Texas. I mean, there's other things that you could list. There are other things that you could list there that they're, yes, their fans are nuts as far as expectations, but their fans are also nuts, and they'll fill out every stadium, every game. You're playing Vanderbilt, you're playing North Texas, it's going to be filled. They're going to be screaming and hollering. Like, you will have support. Yes, it is a little bit of crazy support, but I don't know if there's many programs in the country that, again, has more money and has the same level of money they have. They have also the same level of talent available to them. All right, I'll do number 9. We can just go back and forth.
Okay.
You are not going to be surprised by this. I don't, because we didn't mention them at all, but Notre Dame is in my top 10. They have, and I do not know if Notre Dame would have been in this position or would have been this high in my rankings, let's just say 5 years ago. The biggest things that have happened is that they have lowered their requirements for players to come on the team. They have started putting a lot of money into NIL, and that they do seem to be heading in the next few years, and then at least in the next, I would probably say 4 to 5 years, they are probably heading to a conference, which I again see that as a positive, not a negative. And so also right now you have your own time slot every Sunday on, or every Saturday on NBC. No one else is touching that. That is your live cable network channel and time. That is a big deal still to this day, after all these years of Notre Dame being in that position. It still matters. Their viewership is still incredibly high. Their fans are crazy in the best way possible as far as giving. They are older, so they give a lot of money. They give towards this program. And there's just, like I said, there's just a lot of tradition and positive things going on within the Notre Dame culture, subculture, and moving ahead with this program.
I don't hate any of that, and I did keep them out. I don't have them in my top 10. I think that's one of those programs that's just outside. What do you think the number of programs that are just outside your top 10 that you would feel confident swapping for, like a 10, 9, 8 kind of slot? Notre Dame's somebody I feel like I could swap for maybe my 9 spot or my 8 spot. You have many of those? I feel like I've got Notre Dame, Tennessee, Tennessee, Florida, and A&M are 3 or about 4 teams or so I feel like I could swap for a top 10 spot.
Probably. So how many teams outside top 10 could I swap in? Is that what you're asking?
Right. That are maybe at that 11, 12, 13, 14 spot.
There's probably 4 teams that I can make a strong argument depending on my mood. And if I adjusted it, I mean, right? Am I wrong in that? Like,
no,
But also, depending on my mood, yes.
If I adjusted my criteria, like where would I want to live? Like if I made where I want to live or where a coach would want to live into a higher priority, then that could definitely give me about four or five schools to swap out. All right, Spencer, but that's a good question. You said there's about two or three.
Yeah, I ended up at about four. Tennessee, Florida, Penn State, and Notre Dame, maybe even A&M could be in there. And maybe not Penn State. Maybe Penn State's a little further back. But Tennessee, Florida, A&M, and Notre Dame are four I feel like I could rotate in. So I guess I just gave away some that are not in my top 10. Florida was pretty close.
Yeah, but Florida shouldn't be in your top 10. Like, let's have that conversation just really quick.
They're not, no.
Yeah. Their NIL is horrible. They have a new athletic director, and so we'll see how things go with that. But their facilities are so like archaic in a lot of ways from everything you've been told. Again, they're just not buying in, like as a fan base, as a athletic department, they're not buying into this new era of college football as far as NIL. And that's just really disappointing. But Spencer, give me your number nine.
USC at number nine.
Okay. Okay. I don't really, I personally don't need a lot of explanation for that. So, I get it, but go ahead.
It's LA. Yeah. I was just going to say it's LA. There's plenty of reason to go there. There's plenty of reason. And from a recruiting standpoint, I have all the confidence in the world that Lincoln Riley is going to turn that offense into what it needs to be. It's just a question of whether or not Lincoln can turn that defense into what it needs to be. The advantage it feels like for Lincoln is maybe he'll be able to get the defensive talent there that maybe eluded him at Oklahoma for whatever reason. So obviously it's a great place. There's so much from the alumni standpoint, so many famous alumni, people that you can get to give money and help build up the NIL and help keep that thing rolling as well. The weird piece is, because you mentioned this earlier, you're going into a new conference, and a lot of people are looking at Texas and Oklahoma and kind of pointing the finger like, you guys struggled in the Big 12. How are you going to do? Like, we haven't done that with USC and UCLA and Oregon and Washington, where it's kind of like you guys have, not that they have been in the same boat as Texas and Oklahoma, but just you guys are about to hop into a tougher conference, and how's that going to look? So USC is certainly going to be in that bag, but it feels like that's one of the programs, if they're humming, then there's no real slowing that down.
Yeah, I just to add to it, because USC is actually number eight for me, so we can just keep going. Like, I can just add this to it. Location, not just as far as living, but talent. Oh my gosh. Like, you don't have to, like, you have to compete within your own conference now of the Big Ten. You only have to compete with one other school, with UCLA, for talent. And everyone knows that California, as far as the major talent, is king for USC. They're not going to UCLA. Or at least not now, they're not. And I agree with you, but like, also, we've seen what USC can be when they're good. And it's nuts. It's chaotic in the best way possible. Like, the amount of famous people that'll come to USC games just to hang out, just to be there, just to be on screen for these games, it is a really cool thing to watch. So yeah, I also they have a ton of NIL money as well. So I get it. I get why you would put them there.
I have, you ready to move to my eight?
Yeah, go ahead and your eight.
So, and I think maybe I'll get some pushback here, but that's fine. I've got Oklahoma at eight. I think that's another place where, and I know I just kind of said Lincoln could maybe get the defensive players to USC that he couldn't get to Oklahoma. I think the right guy can get defensive players there too. So some of me thinks maybe Lincoln wasn't as
Maybe he thought my offense will do enough and my defense can just, I don't know how much he went after the top talent on defense at Oklahoma, but I think you can get those guys there. They have everything that you would want from a prestige standpoint. You can go into the state of Texas. It's right there. National recruiting is available to Oklahoma as well. They should be able to travel to California, and that OU is going to show up easily. And that's not just due to the football team, but their softball team is kind of good too. Not that other teams don't have good, you know, other programs as well, but just Oklahoma should be, at least in my mind, I believe that that's a national brand and that can recruit anywhere. And you're set up for a good amount of success there at Oklahoma. It will be interesting to see, though, how much of a kind of a thump on the nose they're going to take, just as a, you know, what, how difficult it's going to be for Brent Venables when they get into the SEC.
Yeah. I don't hate it. Oklahoma is, Oklahoma's outside of my top 10. But they are on that precipice of, like, I could easily switch them out, right? Like, sure. I could easily hear the argument or make the argument myself, for them. Okay. Let's go to number 7. I think I'm doing this math right. Huh?
Yes. You go from 8 to 7. Yes.
Yeah. Number 7 is Penn State. I believe that Penn State is they are constantly looked down upon just because James Franklin can't beat the two teams that are in the playoff almost every year within their conference. And to me, that doesn't dock you horribly for that. I also think they have maybe one of the most rational fan bases and most giving fan bases within NIL and support of anybody in the country. Would you agree with that? Like, as far as expectation and how they, like, you don't ever hear really about James Franklin being on the hot seat because they're perfectly fine winning 10 games every year.
Is that a top 10 job?
I think so, because they get talent. They get talent constantly. They have such, again, it's this one is a lot about fan support and fan expectation. Like, you could, like, again, we talked about this job so many times, like Kentucky could be a job it's not in my top 10, but you could make a argument that Kentucky's one of the best jobs in the country, because as long as you win a certain number of games, you are constantly going to be, like, you're going to constantly get raises, you're going to constantly have that job. Also, again, this is about the job. And also, they play one of the top 2 best conferences in the country, and they're in the race for it every November. Like, they have access to talent, they have the ability, and I think that this is one of those jobs, Spencer, that you were talking about earlier. I think this is one of those need the right coach jobs. Like, tell me Penn State doesn't have, like, a little bit of Georgia going on with them, with Mark Richt. Like, having the ability, having the talent, just can't get over the hump with one or two teams within your own division, within your own conference. Hell, it's been division for them. Within your own conference, James Franklin just may not be the coach for them. But that doesn't mean that job isn't one of the best jobs in the country.
I'll disagree with that.
Say again, I'm sorry?
I don't disagree with that.
Okay, cool.
I think the potential's there. I had him at 13.
Okay.
I made a 15, and just to kind of give me an idea of who else was there. So I had him at 13.
Yeah, that makes sense. All right, what's your next?
Michigan was 7 for me. Okay. I think Ann Arbor is – I know we've talked a little bit about where to live. I think Norman, I think Tallahassee, I think L.A., obviously, are all great places to live on different levels. I'm sure Tallahassee, if you're I would bet Bobby Bowden from time to time has trouble, used to have trouble going out to eat in Tallahassee.
because you just get bombarded with everybody. LA, maybe that's a little bit less. Ann Arbor, I won't pretend to know what that's like there, but nonetheless, Ann Arbor supposed to be a beautiful place. Michigan has been out of the national spotlight for a number of years, and Jim Harbaugh comes back in, and it's a little bit slow. It doesn't happen right off the rip, but he's able to get that program turned around. They're competing for playoff spots. They're right there in the thick of it for their conference pretty much right away, and they have to try to get over, you know, Justin Fields in Ohio State or C.J. Stroud in Ohio State, you know, two NFL quarterbacks. So two first round picks there at quarterback and a really good coach in Ryan Day. So, they finally do get over that, and they kind of slow roll all of this, but they finally get to it. And then they take over that conference with, what now is it three straight wins over Ohio State, or is it two back to back?
Yeah.
Yeah. So they're doing that. They win the national championship. They go through Alabama to win the national championship. So, I like Michigan as a top 10 job pretty easily.
They were number 12 for me.
No kidding.
Yeah. For me, it's just like the knock, like Bama is going to just spoiler, like Bama's on my list, but Bama is not incredibly high on my list because I think it takes the right kind of coach at that program to make this work. Michigan has not won a title in God knows how long until this past year. They hadn't really been there in the hunt since 97. And I think there are things that hold them back. And I don't know if that's the conference. I don't know if that's the infrastructure. I don't know if that's the quote Michigan way thing that they try to do. I don't know what it is, but I just think there are things that hold Michigan back from being successful at times. Being successful consistently.
Enough.
I do like that our lists are different though. All right. Actually, it's your turn to start the next one.
I had seven Michigan. Who did you have at seven?
Penn State.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. So yes, you're correct. So at six, I have Alabama at six okay. on my list.
Okay.
I think Tuscaloosa's a great town, from a college football perspective. I'm sure maybe the going out to eat part of this conversation, if you're the head coach, might not be quite so easy. I'm sure Nick Saban for many years kind of got barred in or would have to, you know, cater in or whatever. But I think that's the kind of job that is in the hotbed of America. And a lot of your programs down here in the Southeast are going to get a bump because you're really close to a lot of the great talent. And I think Alabama is one of those places that you're close to a lot of the great talent. I think your NIL structure is going to be good enough. I think with Nick Saban just outside your program now, even who, you know, Kellen DeBoer now going to have a resource there in Nick Saban to, you know, assist with so many different things. I know that doesn't necessarily go into the overall standard of the program from a job standpoint, but that was more minute for this current coach. But either way, Alabama's right there. Bear Bryant winning for so many years and building the history of that program and sort of cultivating a lot of the things that Nick Saban was then able to take to the next tier and do what he did. I think Alabama is easily one of the top 10 jobs in the country, not just because of their success that they've had here recently and how far that's going to take them going forward, but I think you have everything you would want at Alabama. Access to talent, the NIL can certainly be better, but it's not terrible. And yeah, I mean, it's the Southeast, so I think Alabama's right there.
Okay, we'll get there with me for in a second. My number six is Oregon.
Yeah.
You own the state. You probably have access to the greatest number, the greatest NIL pot there is. You have this vast jersey uniform collection that players love. You have this now, especially in the Big Ten, I think this is going to bring even more revenue to the school. This is going to bring more access to the school. They no longer at any point ever again do they have to play on the stupid Pac-12 network. Like, they will have access to games, the game times that everyone will be able to watch. That I don't know if there's a team who's going to benefit more from changing conferences than Oregon, because they're about to get a ton of benefits that I don't know if everybody is thinking about. But Oregon is about to be, I wouldn't be surprised if we don't do this in a year or two again, Spencer, and Oregon's like top three. I just think they're incredible. I think it's an incredible job. Do you have anything to add, or do you want to wait?
I have Oregon at five. So NIL pot, Phil Knight, or Nike being all involved and right there for everything that you want. You have access to California. The right guy. I think Dan Lanning is one of those right guys that understands recruiting and getting after it. I think everything else for Oregon is ready to go. I think that's the kind of interesting part of all of this, too, is a lot of the recruiting stuff does depend on the coach. Just where's the program located? And I think Oregon's located in a great spot to finally really turn up their recruiting. Dan Lanning has an opportunity to really skyrocket that aspect of this job that maybe other people have not been able to do. And he's going to take those resources to the next level, spending so much time here at Georgia, helping to take those resources to the next level. So I like Oregon. I feel like Oregon might be at number five on my list, might be sort of the highest sleeping giant that can be talked about sometimes. Arkansas, South Carolina get kind of tabbed as sleeping giants from time to time because we're kind of waiting on the exact right person to get to those jobs and take things to the next level. But I think Oregon is one of those, that's kind of the top sleeping giant here, because they don't have the pedigree that everybody else has, but we see the incredible potential just sort of waiting to be tapped into, and hopefully it's Dan Lanning.
Yeah. Okay. No, I love it. I mean, I've already said that they're my number six, and what's ironic is my number five is Alabama. Just everything you said, the reason why they're not higher is because I need to see them be successful. Like, we probably should drop them lower, but like I just my hesitation with them is just as simple as this. Is Bama still going to be great, or do they need another Nick Saban to be great? Does that make sense?
So let me think here, because I'm envisioning that some of what Alabama is now obviously is contributed to Nick Saban. So that's, of course. I think Nick Saban would have probably been successful no matter where he went. I think we'd both agree.
Yes.
Agree on that.
Yes.
I think the pedigree that was built by Bill Bryant or Bear Bryant helped Alabama be as successful as they were. I think Nick Saban, if he went back to Michigan, or if he went back to Michigan State, if he went anywhere else, and maybe just outside the Southeast, I don't know. I think the combination of Saban and Bama and what had been built there already helped to take that thing to the next level. That I do think Bama and its pedigree is a part of how that thing became what it was.
That's fair. Here's what I'll say. Like, just looking at it really quick, we're talking about one of the, like, they have the most national championships of any other college football team, right? I just want to set that standard out the gate. They have titles in 1925, 26, 30, 34, 41, 61, 64, 65, 73, 78, 79. The thing about this, and again, why I struggle with how high I put Bama, and whether, like, again, I think you were probably right. Oregon probably should be higher than Bama, because Bama won a title in 92 with Gene Stallings. They don't win another title, and I don't know if they come close to winning another title again until 2009 with Nick Saban. It's almost as if, Spencer, they had to have someone like Bear Bryant or, again, a Gene Stallings or Nick Saban to be successful. I'm not saying that's always the case, but it kind of just feels like they have to have these legend, like these high top-tier coaches to be successful and to be an elite job. Isn't that kind of what we're trying to say you don't need?
No, I think what happened at LSU with what's his name is a total and complete. I think he got into a situation where his entire staff was the right thing. Ed Orgeron.
Yeah.
That all of that went right. And I don't think that happens very often. We go through every single program on this list. And every single one of their legendary coaches, their successful coaches, are legendary guys. Bobby Bowden and I'm blanking on the names now at Oklahoma and Michigan. But all of those guys have all been legendary status guys. And some of that's because of where they went and the program that they helped tap into, the resources and all those things. But the coach is separate from the job, in my opinion. And Florida's dormant right now because they just don't have the right guy. Tennessee's dormant right now because they just don't have the right guy. Texas has been dormant for a long time because they just don't have the right guy. USC, same thing since Pete Carroll. They just don't have the right guy. And any place with wrong management, with wrong leadership, with wrong people at the top are going to go into the dump, because it's just, you can't avoid, the program's not going to be able to get around bad leadership. So the coach, and I think that's where Bama went from 92 to 09, is they just couldn't get the coach right. And you as the program can't overcome the bad coach. I just don't think that a dip in time from 92 to 09 doesn't affect the status of the job. Or if Ed Orgeron gets lucky one time and something crazy happens with the right staff and the right collection of players, and they go on this unbelievable run, I have LSU highly ranked on my list, but it's not necessarily because the crazy Ed Orgeron won that one time. I have them on my list because I think that's a hotbed of where to go, and I think turning that program around is not going to be difficult. And certainly Ed Orgeron doing what he did means a whole heck of a lot. And that's why they're number two on my list. But I don't think you can set that standard for every program, because Georgia doesn't have an Ed Orgeron, and Ohio State doesn't have an Ed Orgeron, and Texas doesn't have an Ed Orgeron. That kind of thing is unbelievably rare. I would imagine a random splash explosion of a year like that is just so rare. I'm not going to penalize Bama for that or any other program.
I just wish we had another school in the situation of Bama, with the history, with everything else like that, that still had recent success, that didn't have the greatest coach of all time coaching them. So I could judge the program like without that lens. And I mean, it doesn't.
So you think Bama's just successful because Nick Saban chose them, and that's just sort of like LeBron? Just
maybe, no,
leave that out.
No,
they're just successful because Bama or Saban chose them.
No, but like the argument you made, like I'm not gonna make LSU, like, let's just say you're not gonna make LSU number one because of Ed Orgeron. Then they got, like, Ed Orgeron got really lucky and fortunate. I think Bama, I'm not saying this is the case because they're number five for me. So it's not like I'm nitpicking like crazy. But like, did Bama just get fortunate to have two of the greatest coaches of all time coach for them? I mean, that's all I'm saying. That's all I'm asking. And by the way, I agree with you. about Ed Orgeron. Like, he, like, everything, the stars aligned so perfectly. I don't know if, I mean, I don't know if we've ever seen something like that before, except for maybe that Auburn run when they, you know, they lost in the national title, as far as a team. But it just makes me think, like, again, it, in 2 years, when we revisit this, if DeBoer has made the playoffs twice or has not really lost a beat as far as competing for an SEC title and competing in the playoff, like, it's moot, right? Like, I'm these.
Well, and I guess my thing is
not even important.
Well, I guess my thing is it Auburn's fault that Brian Harsin couldn't recruit, or is it Brian Harsin's fault that he couldn't recruit? And maybe that's a bad example because of all the extra stuff.
Yeah.
But is it Florida's fault that Dan Mullen didn't want to recruit, or is it Dan Mullen's fault that he didn't want to recruit? It's not Florida's fault. It's Dan Mullen's fault because he didn't want to do it. Florida's got recruits with Ron Zook and with Steve Spurrier and with Urban Meyer. They got recruits with them wherever their, whatever the status is of their facilities. And I understand going back in time and, you know, maybe their facilities were up, better up to standards of those times. I get that part, but Florida won championships and recruited really well with a lot of different people. I guess what I mean is the right people went in there and recruited. I'm not punishing Florida because Dan Mullen didn't want to recruit. I'm not taking their level down because Dan Mullen was bad leadership or didn't take advantage of the resources he had.
Yeah, I guess
I'm separating. I'm doing a different job of separating, not a better, but a different job of separating the coach from the job.
Yeah. And I guess I just look at it as, you know, players. And again, this is, it's why, it, like Spencer, ultimately, it's why it's not a fair or right conversation to have right now, because we're talking about the greatest coach of all time and trying to decipher, is it the man or is it the school? Because,
well,
for the last 10 years, these players have not gone to Bama because they want to play for Bama. They've gone to Alabama because they want to play for Saban.
Same thing, though, for the players that are going to Georgia or the players that go to LSU or the players that go to – well, wait a minute. The players that go to Florida, the players that go to Florida State, when they're going and Florida State's on the run that they're on in the 90s, that's because of Bobby Bowden, or that's because of Urban Meyer or Nick Saban, or it's because of Mack Brown, or it's because of Pete Carroll. It's the coach that brings the recruits in, is my point. And so I can't punish the program because the coach didn't bring the players in. It's the coach's responsibility for bringing the players.
I disagree.
How do you disagree with that? Because, like, it's the, you have, because the program has access, because there's
NIL. Because in this era of college football, there's still NIL to deal with, the financial backing of whether you
now. We're talking about the history of college football.
But we're ranking these jobs for now. Like, if I was ranking these jobs for 10 years ago, like, this list would be, like, Oregon would not even be close on this list. Like, but we're talking about this, like, the current culture. And that's, again, going back to the Alabama thing, like, Alabama has gotten a Saban discount for NIL for the last 3 years and hasn't had to fork out money. And that's why, again, I'm trying to wait. And I kind of want to wait and see and have this conversation again in 2 years. Like, does he still sign top three classes? Are they still able to get those elite players because they have the NIL and fan support that allows them to pay for these guys? Because I do think it's different now.
It's 100% different now. I guess the argument that I'm trying to make is that it's the coach's responsibility to bring the players in. It's not the program's responsibility. Even with the NIL involved, the program raises the NIL. So here's our $50 million for NIL. It's the coach's responsibility, or the coaching staff's responsibility, to go out and broker those deals, I guess. Or it's somebody else's responsibility to make those things happen. That's not the, I'm separating the program from that to some degree. The program raises the money. That's their responsibility. The coach is supposed to tap into it. That's his responsibility.
Yeah, I get that. I don't know if Bama has that. Has access
has
to
what?
That. Has the access to that. Like, your hypothetical, like the money that you mentioned. Like, I don't know what
think DeBoer Bama can raise just as much money as anybody. I mean, not just as much money as anybody, because we already said Oregon's got the biggest pot. I get that.
Yeah.
But like, if Oregon's raising $100 million for NIL, I don't think Bama's ridiculously far behind that. I don't think they're sitting at $10 million and $15 million, or are they? Am I wrong?
And that's what I'm saying. Like, I don't, we don't know, because they have not had to pay like a normal, like every other school now. And that's why, again, like, I think that this specifically Alabama, the conversation will be easier to be had and more clarity in 2 years when we see someone who's not Saban and also Bama are working now within NIL the same way that any other school would.
Yep. NIL changes this conversation a lot.
Yes. All right. So this is number four. I have Ohio State. I don't know if there's much to explain at this point, because we're so high and deep into this. Not many schools have the same amount of talent, support, NIL, fans, full stadiums, head of the, like, they're still picked to win their conference. Well, definitely they're picked to win their conference this year, because, you know, Michigan has lost, you know, Michigan lost just so much talent. Like every single coach who's ever coached at Bama in the last 20, 25 years has been able to get talent with no problem. Ryan Day is no exception to that. And then you throw in the financial aspect of it. It doesn't seem that there is a problem. And especially this past recruiting class of them being able to hold off that on signing day, or the night before signing day, to be able to hold off all these programs that were going after Jeremiah Smith and these other elite recruits. It just shows that Ohio State is able to still recruit at an incredibly high level, top three, top four level, regardless of what era they're in.
I have Ohio State at three.
Okay. I'm very curious to see.
I think we just have a couple of flip-flops here.
Yeah, who's your four then?
Texas.
Oh, they're my three.
I figured. Yeah, so okay. I like Texas for a lot of the same reasons that you mentioned. I think they've gotten a great collection of talent. I was just talking about my number four.
Yeah, you said, like, I mentioned, like, I hadn't mentioned Texas yet, so, but keep going, I'm sorry.
Yes, I'm thinking of Texas like you're thinking of Ohio State.
Okay, yeah, all right, that makes sense.
The other two programs that we have on our list. Yeah. Everything's right there. Obviously, the recruiting, I think they can build NIL as good as, if there's anybody that would challenge Phil Knight and Nike and what Oregon has, I guess it would have to be Texas. Would be pretty darn close to matching that kind of thing. So them and A&M, I guess. Texas definitely high up on the list. A great history of players that have been able to come through there. And you can't really ask for much more. I think Austin's probably a beautiful blend, from what I can understand. A great blend of a big city, but still not too big a city. This is not LA, this is not New York, but it's sort of the right blend of big time city and enough of a college feel that will take it a long way. So you can't ask for much more. And now, as a Texas coach, you'll get to walk around. And I know A&M mentioned this, or I've heard it mentioned about A&M, that it's crazy to think of it like this, but it was such a recruiting advantage for A&M to be able to go into houses now and show off that SEC logo. And so now that Texas can show off that Southeastern Conference logo, recruiting is going to be that much more. There'll have that much more access, and they're already a national brand, so just that much more opportunity to make an impact, I guess. So
yeah,
Texas number 4 on the list, right behind Ohio State at number 3.
Yeah. So I already talked about Ohio State. So Texas, they're number 3 for me. Exact same things you know, we talk about Texas A&M having Scrooge McDuck money. Well, Texas has like whoever Scrooge McDuck's dad is, that's who they have. they have so much money. Here's the interesting thing though, like Texas also has like this aura about them to choke, which I don't, which is probably why I have them at 3. And just except for Mack Brown in 2006 and the 2010 run with Colt McCoy, like they haven't really been in it, you know, for a national championship. And they were in the playoff this year, obviously, with Sark. And I think you would agree, like Sark, at least to this point, seems to be like the guy for them to get them to that, to at least get them to the, hey, we're going to compete for this year in and year out. I don't really have a negative for Texas. I mean, at this high a point, just like with at 5 with Bama, like I really just think it's nitpicking, right?
Yeah, you're probably splitting hairs all the way through here. For sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Anything to add about Texas?
Nope. I'm good. Nothing to add for Ohio State either. They're at 3 for me.
All right, Spencer. So we have the same 2 for the last 2. I just straight up, I didn't make Georgia number 1. Did you?
I did.
Okay.
I went ahead and pulled that trigger.
Yeah, and I get it. My thing for me of it's not the Ed O thing. It's the fact that 3 of the last, we'll see about Brian Kelly, but 3 of the last 4 coaches at this school has won a national title because they are continuously supportive. They pay the money. Their fans are incredible. They have the best stadium environment in the country. They continue to play in the SEC, and they were the ones who constantly took on Bama and won titles, won SEC titles, won national titles, even during the run of Saban at Alabama. So that's where I had LSU at number 1. But like, what do you want to add to that before we talk about Georgia?
No, I'm good there. I think I don't have a problem with giving LSU extra credit for the Ed Orgeron thing, because that did happen there. And I think, like with Nick Saban, you Ed Orgeron and the right coaching staff and a national championship and 50 points a game and Joe Burrow absolutely going bonkers and the rest of that offense going bonkers and the defense doing just enough, like that perfect storm isn't going to happen just anywhere. And I think the reason Alabama and Nick Saban were as successful as they were is because I think it was a combination of a really strong program and the right coach. I think the perfect storm happens in Baton Rouge because you get the right staff. Ed Orgeron does what he does, and it was working and clicking with that staff. And then it has to happen at a LSU. And there's probably not many other LSU-like programs that would be able to, that you'd be able to do that at. There's if Ed Orgeron and his staff and the team are the storm, LSU is the water, then there's not many other bodies of water that's going to happen in. And yeah. LSU gets a lot of credit for being that quality of a place where the right coach, the right collection of players, the right coaching staff can sort of just, I don't want to say pop up, but sort of just pop up and boom, it all comes together the way that it does. I fully give LSU extra credit for that, even though I think, you know, you can't judge every program that way. But yeah, LSU number 2 on my list, because like you said, the last 3 guys have been able to win there. Previous to Brian Kelly, and he's off to a really good start with a tremendous offense from this past season. And, you know, everybody goes through some lows now and then, but I expect that defense to be a lot better this next go around. And
God, it can't be worse.
Well, yep, that's true. That is absolutely true. But the defensive talent, the offensive talent, it all, you don't have any problems. And then two, you've mentioned this for, you know, Oregon, I think, running that state. Louisiana State is running that that state as well, because I think it's been mentioned, and I'm surprised you didn't bring it up, the fact that every time you go to the state championship weekend for high school football, everybody there is either called the Tigers or they're all purple and gold, or both, whatever that line is that is delivered for the state of Louisiana. They love that program to the point where the high schools look just like that program, and they want to be called what that program is called. And they are royalty, purple and gold, right there in Louisiana.
It's crazy. I forgot about that.
Baton Rouge is probably a great place to live.
Yeah. Have you ever been to Baton Rouge?
I have not, but I have been invited to go here recently. I think they've got some sort of military museum that my brother and his wife want to go to. And so I think there's a chance I'll be going soon.
It's really cool. You should definitely go if you get a chance. All right, Spencer, I really did put a lot of thought into the LSU versus Bama, like job one, job two. Like I really did. Like you could have made, and I think I have made the argument for, especially before Kirby took it, that Athens was the best job in the country. When you take everything in consideration, even before NIL, you look at location, you look at talent pool in the state, you look at who runs the state, you look at the support of fans, you look at the stadiums, you look at facilities, you look at athletic department, you look at all these different facets, and man, Georgia just has it all. And like, I want you to take this because they're your number one, but like what made them different for you than LSU? And I don't mean this in a competitive way, but just like legitimately, like what puts you over the edge with Georgia over LSU?
Well, and I think some of it just has to do with the state of Georgia and being right next to Florida, and not, again, Louisiana, great high school football, and you're not terribly far from Florida. But being that close to the Carolinas, you're right there to Tennessee, you're right there at Florida. Athens is in such a perfect spot. It's a great town. I think the history of pulling great talent through Georgia is tremendous. I think the success that Mark Rick almost had at that program is pretty significant. I think the fact that he had, I think you and I would agree, and other Georgia fans would agree, there were about three championship programs that he had, teams that he had, and unfortunately, all three of them fell short.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure Ohio State fans can think, oh boy, we've had four or five of them that have fell short, and Texas can think of the same thing, and Bama, I'm sure, can go through their history and think, oh boy, that was a close one too. But I think Mark Rick, even for whatever shortcomings he had championship caliber teams built at Georgia and never got it done. I'm not giving Mark Rick credit for anything that he didn't do, but I think the fact that he was able to build it at Georgia and maybe build it doing things differently than the way everybody else did, I think that speaks a lot to Georgia as well. That if Mark Rick was doing everything the right way, quote unquote,
yep,
if that's the case, and he was building championship programs, I think that goes a long way. Championship caliber programs, I think that goes a long way. And maybe it was something that tipped my cap there. And obviously back-to-back championships here is something that goes a long way. And number one recruiting classes so many years in a row. Again, a lot of that's attributed to Kirby because he puts in the elbow work. But number one class. I mean, it's going to be hard to have the back-to-back and so many number one classes at Louisville or at Kentucky or at these other places. I think having that kind of success on the recruiting trail happens for the teams in our top five, our top happens for the teams in our top 10. And, you know, Georgia's had a lot of that success. So I think I like Georgia a lot.
You talk about
for those reasons.
Yeah. You talk about sleeping giant. Georgia was the epitome of the sleeping giant before Kirby got there. You know,
not a championship since 80. Sure.
Like, but just like Scott Van Pelt, Cole Kublik, Ryan Russillo, all these guys during the time of Mark Richt's run, Andy Staples, all of them talked about like, man, you know who kind of, you know who's going to be like elite if they can just get the right guy? It's Georgia. And we as Georgia fans never thought it was coming, especially the first, you know, 4 years, like especially after the loss that they took, we took the national championship game in 17, or I'm sorry, 16, no, 17. But like we took, you know, took that hard loss and we're like, okay, well, this is just Mark Richt all over again. But dear gracious, man, the giant awoken, you know, like we talk about what used to be. And at least until they make changes to some things within, like, especially the stadium and other things like that, like, I don't think Miami can be that sleeping giant again until some drastic things change. I do think, like you said already earlier, like, I do think there are schools that we've talked about tonight that are another sleeping giant if they just get their Kirby Smart in. Would you agree with that?
Yes. Sorry. Arkansas, South Carolina are two that come to mind. I think those are programs that are right there.
Yeah.
Outside the, obviously their footprint is great. I don't know everything about facilities and those things at those places, but, those seem to be, there's no reason why North Carolina or South Carolina shouldn't be better at the things that they want to do to be successful because they're right there in the hotbeds. I mean, Arkansas is right there next to Texas and Louisiana, and it's not far from here at Georgia and going there into Florida. So Arkansas should be in a prime location as well.
Yeah, no, I agree. I probably think A&M's probably the next, like, Georgia-level sleeping giant that could happen if they could just get the adult in the room and handle crap, you know, the right way. But no, Spencer, this is fun, man. I'm glad we did this. I also am very glad that we had different answers. So it wasn't just, like, just perfect selection all the way through.
Yes, I agree. Although I could see A&M going in maybe over Oklahoma, especially after having such a stance on the success of the program depends so much more on the coach than it does so many of these other things. So I think that part of our conversation sort of led me to moving, an A&M in and maybe even moving Oklahoma out of the conversation. So, yes, I enjoyed us having different people there and talking about different programs.
Where did you
have Tennessee and Florida? Or did you have them at all anywhere from 11 to 20?
Florida would be in the top 20. Tennessee was like that 13 range. I won't lie. Like, Tennessee was even though they were 13, they were the first one when I was making my list. They were the first one where I was like, I think I'm going to drop them down, like drop them out of the top 10. But it wasn't like an easy thing. I was just like, I really had to think about it. And Tennessee's another situation where I don't know what they are. Like, it's, I don't know what they are as a job, because this is the same school that like set their coach up to fire them, You know, like, I don't know if that's a good job to want to go.
Play. Yeah, who are your bosses?
Yeah,
is another thing that the Tennessee conversation sort of highlights all along here. And when we're saying things about you have the support and such, and I know Lincoln Riley had some things about Oklahoma of maybe Oklahoma didn't always have the best buy-in. So again, another thing that might move them outside of your top 10 is Oklahoma all the way committed? Miami for a long time. I think we just recently got introduced to the fact that Miami wasn't all in for a long time, that there were people in charge of that school, of presidents, whatever, that just didn't buy into football quite like they used to, and quite like they do at Alabama or at Georgia. So the buy-in and the support and the all of that stuff from you, Rob, you're a teacher. How important is it to have the people above you supporting and pouring into what you want to do in your classroom? That stuff's got to be so incredibly important so that you can do what you want to do in your classroom so that your kids can learn. So yeah, I think if you're Tennessee and the same thing for Auburn, I mean, if you're going to be sabotaging your coach, if you're going to be opening investigations to get rid of your coach, then yeah, I mean, okay, that's just fire me.
Yeah.
You know, or whatever it is. It's yeah. And then of course your fan base and the way that they reacted to the Greg Schiano thing. That sort of makes you a little worried.
That, I mean, that their fans were able to cost a coach from not getting his job, getting the job. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Now, I guess that's a double-edged sword, because you could say, well, if those guys like you, then they're going to go that hard for you into war. And I go, okay, that's cool. They're going to show up every Saturday and be nuts for you. But yeah, if the tide turns at any drop of the hat, then yeah, you're in trouble.
Yeah, I agree with you. All right, man, I'm spent.
Did you have Auburn anywhere?
No, they were one of those.
They feel like a weird wild card.
Yeah, they're top 20. I mean, but they're top 20 just because of NIL. Like it.
Yeah.
It's I, you know, there's that stat of how many, like, it's like 56 or so coaches have lost their jobs since Saban took over in the SEC. I am curious to see if Auburn doesn't all of a sudden become great without a Nick Saban giving them L's every year.
Every, you know, so often, because Auburn was pretty competitive against Saban too.
Yes.
It helps when Cam Newton's an unbelievable running back at quarterback and can actually throw the football.
And some witch casts a spell on a football for two games in 2013 or 2012.
Mm-hmm. 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 Yep. It is funny that Auburn's that close. How far is Auburn from Baton Rouge? And sort of like, what's the word I'm thinking of? Voodoo.
I mean, they're two states over, or three states over. How far?
Yeah. Maybe Auburn is, I don't know. Those two play each other all the time, and they have plenty of Wiccans, I think is the word you like to use, between the two of them. Yeah. So maybe some of that Wiccans just sort of spilled over into that Bama game and that Georgia game.
It's two states over.
Incredible year.
Yeah, it's two states over, and it's a six-hour drive from Auburn.
That's not
LSU.
Terrible.
No, that's not.
It's not terrible. You can do that on a Friday afternoon and spend the weekend.
Some witch doctor definitely could, you know, drive over there, cast a spell, and then everything be okay for a weekend.
Yep. Hop on the broomstick and head back. All right, my man. You got anything else?
No, man. I'm just glad we got to record. I love you, bud.
Love you as well, my friend. Two friends, one love for each other and for college football. Be sure to like, rate, review, and subscribe. We'll catch you on the flip-flop. Later.